everyone, and welcome to episode 571 of the MTG Goldfish Podcast. I'm Seth, probably better known as Saffron Olive, and we have the full crew here this week, kicking things off with the owner of MTG Goldfish, Richard. How are you this fine Monday, Richard?
Good morning, Seth. Doing well. Lorwyn eclipsed weekend. And then my condolences to you, Seth, and your head coach. And lots of terrible things happened to the city of Buffalo this weekend.
honestly, that is true. Although the coach being gone, I think it might be a good thing. We've kind of stalled out at the same point for a bunch of years in a row. So who knows? Sometimes change is a good thing. But we got another co-host coming to us live from a music studio this week. And Krim. Krim, where are you at the moment?
I'm just up in my hometown, just doing some fun family things and maybe some little other things along the way. But the main thing here is while I'm here, you know, I'm on the opposite side of that playoff game. I'm actually pretty happy about how the Broncos did as a Broncos fan. Only thing sad is the ending. We just don't talk about that. So I do not want to hear how sad it is that Bo Nix obliterated his ankle.
Yeah, that's
what
rough.
Cost? At you know, what cost? It's over.
It spawned the sickest tweet from Nick Foles. So,
yeah, I was going to say, think of how happy you'll be if you keep winning with your backup quarterback. I mean, that you're going to be thrilled because no one expects to win with a backup quarterback. So,
yeah, exactly.
Anyway, today, our main topic, Lorwyn Eclipse pre-release, which also happened to be Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles pre-release by accident. So we're going to dig into Lorwyn Eclipse pre-release, all these Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles cards. We also got some random news. We got like a new secret lair drop with some unique commanders, some pre-modern bannings. So we're going to jump around a little bit. But the main topic, Lorwyn Eclipse pre-release. But before we get into that, a reminder that today's show is brought to you by Card Conduit. And Card Conduit's the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. If you ever get tired of the hassles of buy listing, you can skip them with Card Conduit. You can use your curated service where you send in as many cards as you want with a buy list value of a dollar or more and pay just a 5% service fee. And if you want to use their sorted service where you list and sort your cards in advance, you can pay just a 2% fee. Either way, you're going to get a detailed report with the results and a fast payment once your order is processed. And you can even get another 10% off by heading over to cardconduit.com/mtggoldfish. Card Conduit, it's the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. Our show's also brought to you by Heavy Play Advanced Gaming Equipment. The RFG Deckbox Max features a clear window to showcase your commander while protecting your deck. Available in three different sizes to fit all of your decks, including your standard and commander decks, the EquipMag system lets you attach an optional dice box and even multiple decks together. Head over to heavyplay.com/mtggoldfish or use the code mtggoldfish at checkout to get 10% off. So thank you to our sponsors for supporting this show. And let's talk some Magic, and let's start with pre-release. So, Richard, I know you were at pre-release. I didn't make it to a pre-release this weekend. Krim, did you go to a paper pre-release this weekend?
I did.
How did it go? So first off, how was Lorwyn Eclipse? And then we'll dig into the drama around this event. But how was the actual format itself? Were people having fun with Lorwyn Eclipse? How was attendance? I've heard some people say attendance was really good at their LGS. How was it for you guys?
For me, I think it was the attendance was about the same again, because where I'm at, right, is a concentrated area. We always have the same attendance.
You're always going to have,
yeah. Yeah, like it's just like always consistently, like pretty packed.
Yep. Hey, that's sweet. What about you, Richard?
It was the same as a good Magic set. So like Edge of Eternity, stuff like that. It sold out, right? But it sold out like as it fired versus Final Fantasy, which sold out like months,
weeks
in advance, or like Spider-Man, which didn't sell out, right? So I don't know, but people were hyped. People really wanted Lorwyn Eclipsed. It was so hyped that the companion app didn't work, really. So we had trouble starting. So I played Friday night. I'm on Pacific time zone, so I'm sure if you had a pre-release during that time, you guys couldn't register either. We had to sit there and submit the QR. You couldn't scan the QR code. You had to type it in. And then you'd submit, and it would, like, time out. You would submit, you time out. And then, like, 15 minutes later, we were in. Once the event started, it cleared up. So I don't know if it was just registering but, you know, when we were actually playing the rounds, reporting and everything was fine. So that eventually cleared up. But there were some other issues going on at pre-release. Yeah.
Yeah, so unfortunately, a pre-release itself ended up being a little bit overshadowed this time, which is kind of funny because I remember when we did Edge of Eternities and they spoiled like Spider-Man cards, everyone was like up in arms about, oh no, it's overshadowing pre-release. This time, we kind of had Lorwyn Eclipse pre-release overshadowed, but apparently by accident. So Richard, you were there. What were the other issues that went down on this pre-release?
All right, so there were multiple issues that had to be addressed during pre-release. So you kind of knew this on the internet. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle cards were being revealed because some pre-release kits, instead of the Lorwyn Eclipse promo, got a Turtles promo. Right now, if you recall, this was the first pre-release where they got rid of the stamp, right? So yep. We no longer have the pre-release stamp. And apparently removing this caused some kind of issue where turtle cards started popping up. So we have collectively across the internet, we have all the rares and mythics from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles leaked by Wizards themselves. And the official response was you were supposed to get them back from the players and give them an equivalent promo pack from Lorwyn Eclipse, which of course you had. For, like, where would you pull this from, right?
Yeah.
So yeah. I think most LGSs were like, yeah, bro, whatever. And that was it, right? You obviously could have played in your pool, but, you know, you were short a Lorwyn rare for your pool. So congrats. And then the other thing is the pre-release kits didn't have the right number of packs. Some of them had 5 packs. Some of them had 7 packs, right? So at our LGS, we had to open them in front of the staff. And if you had 7 packs, they would confiscate one and give it to someone who got 5 packs, right? Because, you know, you don't want to do pre-release with 5 packs, right? So there were all kinds of weird distribution errors, possibly due to the promo stamp removal, but weird, right? Like, they've been doing this for so long. Like, yeah. How, right? Like, how?
I mean, I can understand, like, sort of, how you could, at the printing press or whatever, mix in some Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles cards that are coming out soon, especially now that they're not, we call them promos still, but really, they're just a foil rare from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, right? There's no stamp, there's nothing that sets them apart. So I could see how it could get mixed up, and you could end up, like, getting the print runs mixed together somehow. How you end up with the wrong number of packs in a pre-release kit, that's, I don't even know. Like, we've been doing pre-release for 25 years now. What do you think, Krim? Like, how did this even happen? Is it just the printing company messing stuff up?
This one has to be the printing press, right? Like, they must have switched to some kind of new printing press or something, right? That has to be the explanation. Or it could be that, I don't know, isn't Ninja Turtles supposed to be, like, super close, like, in release cycle? It's like a month
beginning
and a half.
Of March. So, yeah, it's like 6 weeks from now or something is the official release, yeah.
Maybe the windows are a little too tight here, you know? Maybe it's the whole 7 sets and all of that. I don't know. It could be that.
6 weeks. I have... Jeez.
Yeah. I mean, but they lived up to the name of Lorwyn Eclipsed. They truly did. But I have you also heard about the other quality issues, too, on top of that? Like, I had friends who cracked packs and, like, collector's packs and all that over pre-release weekend, right? And a lot... It also surfaced online. It seemed common that people who opened the foil double-sided cards, like either Ashling or you know, Sig, it'd always be the backside that have this like scratcher look.
Oh,
and it's like
I saw a couple
up.
Of those.
Yeah. My I had a friend who opened up Ashling. It was obliterated on the backside. And so not only were there incorrect packs, all of this, there's also the fact that just like your cards are straight up damaged.
That's the new stamp now. Instead of a stamp with a date, you just do a little scratch up on the back so you know you got it at pre-release, yeah.
Krim asked for a stamp, we got him. By the way, I miss those stamps. Not the year stamp, still don't care about them. I still miss the date stamp, okay, guys? I'm just saying, we would have known it was January, whatever, 16th weekend, but now we don't. I'm just saying.
I know. It saves you looking down at your phone to see what the date is. Cards are pretty convenient that way. I mean...
I did hear, though, it makes sense why that had to go, because it's like, you know, do you buy the band shirt of the tour that you didn't go to, right? Like, it's one of those things. Like, some people are like, it feels bad if that's on there. Because then it's like, why would I buy a band shirt of a tour I didn't attend? You know what I mean? That kind of thing. So I'm
don't they sell band shirts of tours from like the 70s at Walmart now? And
they
people
do.
Buy them.
You know what?
So I
Walmart...
think some people buy them.
Okay. Maybe then you know what? Maybe that whole argument is moot. But like, I don't know. I miss them.
I'm curious. Have people actually complained about the stamp? Like, I guess we talked about this a little bit when they announced it. I've heard mostly people complaining that the stamp's not there anymore. But yeah. Maybe there's some people that dislike the stamp too, and it's a positive for them. I just figured it was Wizards trying to save a couple bucks. Like, if you can avoid printing the stamp, yeah.
I mean, at the very least, it helps you determine which one's your promo, right? Not just a foil card that you could have opened in your pack.
Man, it's the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles card, obviously.
Also, I will say, though, as much as I wanted my Laurelwood promo, there's a part of me that's like, wouldn't it be funny if I opened one? Like, I would. It was almost like this weird golden ticket that was funny.
Yeah, it was widespread, but not everyone. No one in my LGS got a Turtles card, but enough people over the internet's got it that we have the entirety of the rares and mythics of Ninja Turtles, right? So it was not exceptionally rare to get this. I will say on the foil stamp, a lot of people at my LGS mentioned it. I think they're all just
good
complaining. They miss it. Right? Oh my God, where's my thing, right? But I'm like, no one bought this card. It was always the cheapest version available because it's like foil, so it curls, so you don't really want it. And like the difference is like the tiny little marker in the corner, right? And Seth thought, like, I was talking to Seth before, he thought they were more expensive. And I'm like, Seth, my friend, you have never did cart optimizer or whatever to get cheapest version, because if you just buy random garbage, half of them come with pre-release stamps, and you actually have to actively go in and filter them out so you don't have like half curly cards for no reason. So
we're
I don't think people actually
stamp.
Wanted them.
Yeah.
Pre-release stamp, not the Planeswalker stamp, right?
Both. But I have plenty of pre-release stamp cards. they're more generally the new ones, right? Like the ones that just have the year on them. But they're foil. Most people don't want the foils because they curl. Maybe commander players do, but like half these cards, like most of these cards aren't commander playable. So I don't know, man. I think it's an effective cost saving measure from Wizards. I will once again complain though about how I go every Magic pre-release, I go and I lose money. This time, I opened the Ward 2 guy. I got $20 back. I opened a foil Hall of Fountain. To my shock, it was only $7. Apparently, foil Shocklands aren't worth anything anymore. Okay?
Yeah.
I won my pre-release, got jack crap. Okay? I'll contrast that to my One Piece pre-release. Okay? Promo card, flipped immediately for $20. Okay? That's the one that you get for participation. Winner card, immediately flipped for $200. Okay? I walked out like $300 richer from my One Piece pre-release, from my pull as well. And then the set before, it was the third year anniversary, I won it, flipped the promos for $200. That crap is like $800 now, right? Wow. Like,
I mean, Riftbound has those.
Contrast it to my Magic cards. How is my like rares doing? That's like 10 cents, right? Like even my special guest bonus sheet card is worth this. Oh, Krim, do you want this? Apparently this is worth nothing too. It's like $8.
It's worth something in here, in my heart. So yeah, I will take it at this buying.
I'm like, these play boosters are just killing me. Like, you opened nothing of value, and I'm
what's funny though is that you opened a special guest, and that is of value when you think of what the card is. But dude, like, have you seen the Riftbound Nexus packs? If you go to like which is like their FNMs, if you open the promo packs, those things are also crazy bank. I think the thing that Magic needs to do is make it so that there's like some kind of like special pack that comes
with
every release.
You know the Aerith chair promo?
That thing is so bank.
The kimono Tifa, like the things you get for winning like the PTQs, they should just give you it as a pre-release promo, either a winner or participation. Like, they need to give you a special version of these cards rather than just like, here's some bulk rare, it's foil, so it's even more bulky for you, and then like call it a day, right? Like, give me a special version and make me hype to show up at your paper event.
I mean, didn't we used to do this? Do you remember? Like, this was like 15 years ago now, but maybe not as special, but getting like
DCI promos?
A special art, well, not even DCI, but pre-release, like a special art Wormcoil. I remember Wormcoil Engine being my pre-release promo, and that was one of the chase cards from the set, and it was like an all-art Wormcoil that they just gave to everyone. So there are ways that you can do it. We even have promo packs in Magic. I don't know exactly if we use them in the same way, and they mostly aren't that good because it's just like some random cards thrown in there. You're not getting like special versions of things, but we could do all this stuff. Like, the technology is there that we could do the same things that these other games are doing, but instead we're like kind of going the opposite direction, as awkward as that is, and like taking away the stamp promos and replacing them with nothing. So I don't know, maybe Wizards has something up their sleeve and this will all make more sense in like 6 months when they announce some sort of new promo. But yeah, it's a tough sell, right? If you can just go to a pre-release of another game and end up with a profit, or at least even just not having to pay a bunch of money for your pre-release. When if you go to Magic, you're always
we're not even
money,
talking about Universes Beyond pre-releases. Like, Morrowind Eclipse pre-release was, what, $35 for me? It's going to vary depending on your area. And, like, something like Final Fantasy would be, like, $50, right? Yeah. So it's a lot of cash to fork over to come away with only the memories, right? Like, you know, give me some cardboard worth some money, okay? Give me something special.
Speaking of the memories, I do wonder if that's the upside of the stamp promo. Like, even if they're not popular, kind of like how, you know, when you go to a Magic Con and some people ask us to sign a card, our signature is not making that card more valuable. It's making it less valuable if you want to sell it to someone. But it's a reminder that, oh, I went to this event and I had a fun weekend and I met Richard or Kramer, Saffron, Oliver, whatever. I wonder, do you think the pre-release stamp is kind of similar, where you stick it in your binder and you look back in 5 years and it's like, oh, that was a cool pre-release. I remember that day. I like opened this rare or whatever.
Yeah, that's why Krim like, wants the exact the value. Right?
Yeah. That's exactly why I want the exact date.
What were you doing? Were you doing something responsible this day? Or no, I was just playing Magic the Gathering.
I was just playing Magic, yes.
You know what reminds me of? You know, proof. Like the old school cameras, like the film cameras, and you can actually get, when you take a picture, it etches the timestamp straight onto the front of the picture. Yeah. So it's like on top of your picture. It reminds me of that. But
Are those
you go to every pre-release. Like, awesome? I mean, if this was a once-in-a-lifetime thing, but yeah, but like, do I need like 60 pre-release cards that are, you know, complete bulk? Like,
Oh, anyway, let's talk a little bit about these Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles cards. So that was the big takeaway from this weekend. It was not really Lorwyn Eclipse. That's what they accidentally spoiled until your next set. And I will say, we're going to dig into some of these cards, and you can find them all on the internet. They're all on Reddit and everything. People just taking pictures of the ones they open and posting them. I will say, and I want your answer to this too, this was a set I was dreading most of the year. Like, I was just like kind of cringing up thinking of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Seeing all the rares and mythics now, I feel somewhat better about the set. There are still some cards that strike me as very cringy, but a lot of the cards seem like kind of fine. Yeah, there's Ninja Turtles on them, but they look kind of like Magic cards and have Magic-y abilities. So my hype level went from like a 1, maybe up to a 2 or a 3, but I'm curious what you guys thought. Like, now that we've seen these cards, did it change your perception of the set at all? And then we'll talk about some of the spoilers, quote-unquote.
I mean, I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know a single thing about Ninja Turtles. So for me, I'm going into this like many of you, right? Where it's just like,
The Seth technique.
Yeah. Like, this is the first one I
Krim doesn't know.
Krim
is this one of these things where he's like, I'm just a light Doctor Who fan. Yeah. I just watch every episode and can list the director of every episode. You know?
Yeah,
like,
but that's casual. I could only do that for like 3 seasons. But like, Ninja Turtles, the only thing I know is like the worst version of it, which is like the Michael Bay movie, right? And then maybe a few of the comic books where they had a collab, a crossover issue with Naruto. And that was
What?
Yeah, well, Naruto and the Ninja Turtles have a crossover comic. Universes Beyond, baby.
What? But I gotta go read this now.
Dude, it's not great, but it is funny. And I think these cards, just like, I look at them as Magic cards, and they are like, there's some really juiced cards here. Like, the mechanics, I think of like sneak and all of that, being these ninjutsu on spells, like all of that. I mean, I like that. I like ninjutsu. I like the way that these read. I like that they're subtle. Like, there's like a new ink eyes, but it's got a very subtle thing in First Strike So that allows you to...
That just like, confused everyone. So many of the people are like, this card doesn't even work.
No,
first strike makes it work, yeah.
When I read it, I also thought, wait, hold on, is this spawning? And wait, this doesn't work. Oh, first strike. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, the first read.
The cards are very interesting, so that alone like already looks like way better just because of how much more interesting all these cards look. But as a flavor plane, I mean, it doesn't bother me, but it also doesn't like have me hyped because I'm not a Ninja Turtles person. But maybe I could be after this. Who knows, right? Like Richard fell in love with Avatar right after playing Avatar, right? I played New Vegas after Fallout came out. So I will maybe check out Ninja Turtles now. I don't know.
What do you think, Richard? Is it going to win Krim over with its awesomeness? What does this do for your hype level?
I just got to say, I finished Legend of Korra Season 4. Banger.
Yes!
Watched the whole thing.
Thank you.
But wow. Anyway, let's go back. I think Legend of Korra is better. Well, okay, never. I don't want to talk about
yes.
it.
Yes, yes.
But I enjoyed it immensely.
Truth. Say your truth, Richard, so everyone can hear, because I agree.
Yeah, better than agree. Avatar?
Yeah. It's different. Wow. It's different. It's like thematically different. It's not the same series, although they're set in the same world. Like the themes and stuff are different. But anyway, turtles, rahaha. Let's see. The cards are definitely juice. Okay. So if you compare power level of Spider-Man versus turtles, turtles much stronger. They're less New York-y. Now, we only have the rares and mythics, so like maybe we're missing our city pigeon and hot dog carts or whatever, right? But
wait for the slice of pizza.
It's
coming.
More like techno-punk New York City or something. Like, it's not like guy eating hot dog New York City, right? So it still feels kind of fantastical in some sense.
Yeah.
Having said that, I just like the cards. Like, I don't know. They look out of place. Like, some of the old school... looking art like Leonardo Cutting Edge, I'm like, okay, I'm down for this. Like that 90s looking art, but like some of the Nickelodeon blocky CGI looking turtles, I'm like, I don't know about this. So I am not a huge fan of this. There's literally a card with a guy throwing pizza in another guy's face. That's cool but rude. That's Raphael.
Dude, that name alone is good. The art is so sick.
Yes, but I don't know. And here's the thing, right? We all kind of know what turtles are, right? Like, even if you live under a rock, you probably know the basic premise of turtles. And you probably know, like, you know, the four main turtles and then probably, like, Shredder or something. You're not compelled to go consume any turtles media in the same way that Avatar would, right? You're like, what is this, right? Like, it's so, everyone talks about it, but what is it really? Whereas, like, everyone's talking about turtles, but, like, you kind of know what turtles are. So, like, it kind of just ends there, and, like, you're done with it. So I don't think I'm going to go down the Avatar arc with turtles, even though turtles is my favorite franchise as a kid. You can't see my shelf. I actually have a shelf of turtles over there. But I'm just not feeling it in the Magic set. But the cards are juiced, so like maybe we'll actually get excited. I'm pretty sure the biggest sin Spider-Man committed was that the cards were not juiced enough. And with enough power, everyone will forgive you. So
with no power comes no responsibility.
That's
so,
right.
Just remember that.
It is.
But,
that is.
Oh, go ahead, Grim.
Well, I was gonna ask Richard because like you. I mean, like, yeah, maybe this isn't, like, your favorite era of Turtles, but, like, it is pulling from different eras, right? Like, that's why there's so many different art styles.
Yeah, and so there's actual spoiler cards, right? There's public cards, right? And there's, you know, you can see all the Turtles across all the eras, and what is it, Turtles Forever or whatever, where they actually, like, mashed them all into one card. But, I don't know, like, some of these cards just feel out of place. Like, flavor. Like you couldn't think this is like, oh, this is a Magic set, right? Some of these cards you can look at, like some of these Splinter cards or whatever, you're like, oh yeah, that could have been Kamigawa or something, right?
Yeah.
But some of these turtle cards, you're like, that's definitely not supposed to be here.
Richard, gonna say, like, half the set looks like it could have been in Kamigawa Nian Dynasty, and then the other half is like, that doesn't look like it fits in Magic. Like it's like 50-50.
Which is weird because I feel like this is kind of just Neon Dynasty. I guess I just don't see where the off part is, other than that, like, maybe Donatello in name, right?
But cool, like, but rude.
Yeah, right. Like in maybe some of the card names are like, I don't know, those don't bother me. Radical Rat, that's pretty funny. Like I think that's pretty rad. I think that's hilarious, and the names have been weird to read, but funny, so I like them, right? Like Cool But Rude is hilarious to me.
let's actually talk about some of the cards. So we went through all these cards, and there's way too many for us to actually talk about every card. But we picked a handful that seem like they might actually be kind of like geared for 60-card play rather than commander play. So, Richard, why don't we do some turtle spoilers by surprise?
All right. Let's start off with Splinter's Technique. Now, there's a full, I don't even understand. It's a cycle? Because like, there's Kitsune's Technique. There's the Turtle's Technique, there's Splinter, so it's like an 8-card cycle, a 6-card cycle. I'm confused.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of them, right? We're going to talk about the black one, right? It's a 4-mana sorcery, Sneak 2. Now, if you remember Sneak, you can cast it for a sneak cost. If you return an unblocked attacker you control to hand during declare blockers. Okay, so it's ninjutsu with a very specific timing that you can do it, and then it's on a sorcery. And then the card itself is search your library for a card, put that card in your hand, then shuffle.
It's a tutor. It's a straight-up demonic tutor, right?
If you sneak it, it's demonic tutor. If you don't sneak it, it's diabolic tutor, essentially, a 4-mana tutor. How good do you guys think this card is? So, like, it seems efficient. Anytime you see a straight-up, you know, demonic tutor, you have to take notice of that. We already have decks that are about bouncing things back to their hand in Standard. We have lots of, like, cheap flyers that you can ninjutsu or sneak off of. We even have some in the set, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles set. I'm sure there's going to be even more support for, like, getting in and sneaking stuff. My only question for this card is, like, you could play it in Demir or something. But what are you tutoring up? Is it worth it? Like, do you need some big combo target, you think, Krim? Or can you just play this and, like, pick up your Spyglass Siren and get your Kaido or whatever you happen to be tutoring up?
I don't know how much air you can put into the deck, right? Like, this is one of those spells where it's, like, meant to be, like, your fifth copy of your Kaido or maybe, like, your fifth copy of Enduring Curiosity. But it's not fully because you do still have to sink that mana, right? And then sink it again. So I don't know. I mean, I don't think this reads and feels a little more commandery to me than it does Standard. Because we've had tutors in Standard numerous times. And almost every time, like, most of them, outside of, like, Stoneforge Mystic and things like that, like, if they are just a generic tutor that looks through the deck, it doesn't really do anything. You've just kind of taken the turn to not do anything. Now, I'm excluding, like, you know, Modern, where you have, like, the green tutor for Green Sun Zenith and all of those creatures in the pacts, right? Because those were free. But like, usually tutors that you spend mana on just aren't enough. This doesn't feel any better.
Oh. Yeah. I mean, that might be true. What do you think, Richard?
Thank God. I thought I was going crazy, Krim. I was like, the demonic tutor's just not good. Like, it's 2 mana. So I can't even imagine it. Like, it's a sideboard slot, like, to increase your sideboard versatility, or, like, there's actually a card that a deck folds to, so you would take the tempo loss, because not only are you paying 2 mana to tutor, right, you're also losing your attacker, right? And then also, if you don't have any of this set up, it's 4 mana, right? So it's, like, gigabad, right?
Mm-hmm,
and
right.
The way decks are set up nowadays, you don't just fold to a single card. Like, what are you going to, like, get graveyard hate? Like, they're going to kill you through the graveyard hate anyway, like a High Noon or something. Like, most decks are set up to go around these anyway. So taking the turn off to tutor, I think, is kind of unplayable. So I don't think we see this anywhere. And I don't even think we see it in sideboards. Like, I could see it being like some kind of like fifth or sixth copy of something for the sideboard, but 2 mana is a lot. And we're so efficient, and all the good decks don't fold to any sideboard piece anymore, right? Like, it's not like you're playing against some kind of dredge deck and you get a ley line out and you're good to go, right? Like, that's not how decks are constructed anymore. So I don't see what you would do with this. And then there's always the down case of it's actually just straight up 4 mana and, like, stone unplayable, right? So I don't think we see this seeing play anywhere, but, you know, maybe. I mean, there's potential.
I think it's got to be, like, a combo deck of some kind. Like, I don't think you just play it in a Demir deck, because it's usually not worth it to pay a 2-mana tax to get your thing, especially in an era where it's so easy to just generate card advantage. But if a combo deck develops, I've seen, like, what is it? Beseech the Mirror, I think, is the one that I've seen the most in, like, combo decks in Standard. We're using that to, like, tutor up your combo piece.
But that puts it into play.
It does. Only, right? Like, yeah, up to four mana, you have to sack something. And it is also triple black, so it's kind of like pretty narrow in the decks that can play it. But that is the upside of that. But I could imagine a shell that's like not as black heavy or as bargainable that would want some sort of tutor to find their combo piece. I gotta ask about a different technique, just because I gotta ask Krim what he thinks of this card. Because as soon as I read this card, I was like, "Oh, this is a Krim card." So this is Kitsune's technique.
Kitsune's
technique. Six mana instant. It says target opponent mills half their library rounded up, and you can sneak it for two mana. Two mana traumatize.
Wait, rounded up.
It's two mana to sneak.
Brother, hold on. Okay, first off, I just want to say thank you for thinking of me when you saw this.
I got you.
And now I see why. Also, yo, this card is sick. Believe it or not, hold on. Two mana to round up?
That shocked me.
Have you been seeing blue-black control run around using Monument, Singularity, Rapture?
Yep.
This is a control deck that is like kind of like tier two right now. And I would say like maybe 1.5 at best. But it just needs a little bit more, a few more, like, you know, mill pieces, right? Unfortunately, I don't know where I'm getting an attacker, right? But that's ever a ninjutsu.
That's the tough part.
Does this mean we may get other mill pieces? That'd be kind of cool. I'd like that, but hold on.
Here's your deck. Firebending student. Kitsune's technique. Fork it. Done.
done.
Right? It works timing-wise, right? Yeah, because you get the fire bending off, you get the mana, and then you Kitsune's and you fork. And then it's done.
Do you even need a fork? Because there's so many things draw and do 100 things in a turn.
No way you're getting there by just milling half, right? If you somehow lasted this long against Izzet, you probably could have won fairly.
Monument, River Churn Monument alone, just only have to pay two mana and then four, and they're most likely, they are dead if this River Churn Monument resolves, right? So, hold on, I think I figured it out. Okay. There's the mill crab. There's a mill crab in standard four enchantments.
Crab?
Yes, it checks whenever.
Yeah. The Duskmourne one.
Yes, there is a Duskmourne mill crab, and that's it's only on attacks. But I guess I don't see a world where somebody doesn't block it. But like,
I think you guys are overlooking maybe the key part about this card. It might not be about sneaking. In those control decks, just as being an instant's kind of wild, because I'm pretty sure every other traumatize that has ever been printed has been sorcery speed. So a mill half your library rounded up, even if you have to cast it for six mana, that's actually like kind of interesting, because I see like Singularity Rupture. Is that the six mana your board in mill half card? I see that on occasion in standard. So I think just being an instant's a pretty big deal on this card, where you can leave up all your interaction, leave up your counter spells, and then like end step, mill half, untap, monument, mill the rest, win the game type of thing. So I think that maybe, like, what do you think about that, Krim, as a control player? Can you imagine casting this for six mana in like a mill control deck?
I could, but my concern is that I could see me casting a lot of mill spells. and then I can too. Regardless of whether they're good or not. But I do also think that there is a world, though, that could be true. It's just how many of these can you add, right? Between Singularity Rupture, you have a six drop there that's sorcery. Yeah. At least that sweeps, right? That does something. Yep. This only mills. Now, if you really can't take advantage of that sneak, you know, like maybe, wait, Bitter Bloom Bearer, right? Right?
Hey,
so you got your fairies. I know. We're talking about Ninja Turtles, like the Lorwyn just didn't drop one of the sickest planes to return to. There's some sweet flash threats that are in that set.
I forgot. We're brewing two sets ahead.
Yeah, we're brewing two sets at once, baby.
Or even just creature lands, like because the sneak is so low, it's actually like kind of realistic that you could creature land and sneak off of it in a pinch and like mill half.
Sure.
I think the card's interesting at least. Like one of the best traumatizes we've seen, I'm pretty sure.
It may be one of the best traumatizes, but sneak I think is gonna have some sweet play. The only thing that sucks about sneak is that it's just not ninjutsu, which is relevant because there's things that care about that.
Oh, you know what this card would have been sick in is the Rogues deck like a couple years ago. Like this card seems built for that playstyle because you're like attacking and got all this evasion and you're a mill deck. Mm.
Wait, maybe they're returning. What set could give us mill rogues? Star Trek? I don't know anything about Star Trek, so.
All right.
Bro, what's next on the
Let's
list?
Go. Krang, Ultram Warlord. 9 mana, 9/9, legendary artifact creature, Ultram Robot, flying, trample. indestructible, haste. Other creatures, or no, other artifact creatures you control have flying, trample, indestructible, and haste.
This...
Is this our jumbo cactar? Newer... What is this? What do we do with this?
This is peak Timmy, right? Like, this is the Timmy card. This is Avacyn.
It's
like
but it's ruined by having to play artifact creatures, at which point you just become Arcbound Ravager deck or Vox Opal deck or something.
And this might be like, good.
I think it might be good as a reanimation target, because, like, not only does it have... So it's 9-9 in the air with haste and trample and indestructible right away, so that's already good, but if you can reanimate another artifact creature or two with some sort of mass reanimation effect, all those get haste and trample and indestructible. It's like an Necroma Memorial that's reanimatable as a creature body, so I have to imagine, like, there's situations where this thing's going to be really good to reanimate or chain to play. What do you think that's possible? Like, is this on the same tier as... Oh, what's our best reanimation target right now? I guess it's Bringer, because it's doing the living end thing, but like, is this worth reanimating?
Well, does the Bringer deck randomly just become more artifact focused? Because it has to be artifact stuff. So, and it doesn't seem like you would need to, because already you're just playing on winning through Terror of the Peaks triggers and all of that.
If you have
the
Terror going, if you have the Terror of the Peaks going, then you don't really need it.
I think this is set up for something later. This has got to be a later piece, a commander piece, one of those. But for right now, this just, I don't see where this plays.
It seems like there's an artifact theme in the set, just from the rares that I've looked at. It seems like Sneak is a big theme, and then Artifacts is kind of like a secondary theme. So maybe we'll get some of the support in the rest of the Turtle set.
So because I know nothing about Star Trek, I'm just going to assume it synergizes with Star Trek. Because there's spaceships, dude. Like, that's artifact, so that's got to be something. But I don't know. With superheroes coming, there's got to be an Ultron, because we saw Ultron in the art. And Ultron's, if not artifact-based, I have no idea what's going on. So, this is a setup piece. This is a super setup piece.
You need an unplayable card to reanimate, and then you got to add other unplayable cards to support it when you reanimate it. This has all the hallmarks. This has none of the hallmarks of a card, right? Because it either needs to draw like half your deck on the way in, or end the game on the spot. And it does kind of neither. Like, if only it pumped the other artifacts, right? Like, if you get a couple of 1/1 artifact creatures with you, like, this still doesn't close the game, right? You need to actually bring in another big body artifact, and it's legendary, of course, so it can't bring copies of itself. So this has the hallmarks of being stone unplayable and a trap card, right? Because if you look like Atraxa,
no,
like Gristle, like these things draw a ton of cards. Right? Or it needs to end. How about I just reanimate on Omniscience? Why don't I just do that? Right? What am I doing here? Right?
Yeah. Boom, boring. Boring.
And then you can cast Krang.
Then you cast Krang. Yes.
Cast. Yes. We're casting with Omniscience.
I'm just saying, I think we could eventually end up in a world where this was actually something you'd want to reanimate. I don't think you slot it into like the Bringer decks right now. You'd have to rebuild it a lot. But I think it's a card that's worth keeping in mind, because like, it can just close out games in a deck that can do what it needs to do. And then we don't have that deck yet, but I think we could have that deck eventually.
All right,
I mean,
Seth.
Just overall, these cards just look better, though. I feel like there's something juiced about this set. Yeah, I get a good feeling
juiced,
about it.
Man.
This seems also pretty juiced, and
there's brewing
I'm
potential
excited.
With them, right?
Yeah.
Whereas the Spider-Man cards are like, Well, Wizards Trade, I
love
Avatar so much. We got a new Avatar card, guys. Northwind Avatar. 2 blue, blue, red, 5/5 creature. Dragon Spirit Avatar. Must have firebending, right? Flying. When this creature enters, if you cast it, you may put a card you own from outside the game into your hand. So not a commander
wish
card.
Creature.
It's a wish creature.
It's a wish
creature. That's kind of cool. Like, design-wise, that is really cool.
Yeah, it's a very cool design. 5/5 flyer for 5 is fine. And I think we've just seen these effects show up in the past. There's no card in Standard right now that tutors from your sideboard. So if you want to do that, like, this reminds me of a card that Ali Eldrazi will end up building some very good deck around. Like, the tutor, what was the...
Mastermind
was
Acquisition.
Mastermind Acquisition was one. There was also the blue, like, 5-mana enchantment that, like, got a spell from your graveyard.
Mirari's Conjecture.
Mirari's Conjecture. Do you remember that deck where you tutor from the sideboard and you'd win? Oh, my goodness. So this just does something that's unique in Standard right now. And I think that's got to make it relevant somewhere. It's also not legendary, which is nice. But
what colors are like? Is the color? It's like
two blue and a red. Yeah. So is it?
That's its biggest drawback. Is that it is in is it where it is the this card has to be like the 451st good is it card.
Yeah, that is so, there's a lot of competition.
Is it control? I mean, it's also a five drop with
you
three
could
colored
Temur dragons. Right? Temur dragons.
Ooh, it's
right?
A dragon. Like,
dragons
dragon?
Would be sweet. It is a dragon.
Because like there's still a lot of Temur stuff there. Yeah. I don't see any like the elementals from like Lorwyn needing this, so
I wonder if you could make it work in like the Temur Battlecrier deck. Like, I wonder if that could get like the cloning thing from the sideboard and you get the discount, so it would only be three mana. Maybe.
I have figured out a life hack to evaluating standard cards. Okay, we apply what we call like 2015 Legacy rules. Okay, does it cost more than three mana? Okay, yes, it is 99% unplayable. But you're like, wait, is it Nick Fittable or Tronable? No, it's a commander card, but it doesn't even work in commander, right? Like, I don't think we can play anything over three mana with a straight face in standard that does not have an alternate cost, right? So, you know, it has to have like the evoke cost or, you know, some kind of cheaty thing, but just a straight up five mana, five, like, there's no way, right?
That is
they're
exactly
like,
what
take
we
your card from
want.
The sideboard. I'm still floodmawing this and destroying you, right? Like, like there's no way, right? So I think it's way too expensive.
I'm okay with things and not everything having an alternate casting cost. You know, like this is maybe for the future when everything is not at two mana anymore or three mana.
All right, if you want three drops, Richard, I got to ask you about this card. Because as soon as I saw this, I was like, oh, this card's great. And then I was like, oh, no, this card's unplayable. Then I'm back to great. I don't know how good this card is. I'm very torn. And it's Casey Jones Vigilante. It's a 3-mana 4/3 legendary human berserker. It says when it enters, you draw three cards. But then at the beginning of your next upkeep, you have to discard three cards at random.
Ooh, at random?
At random. So is this card, like, insane? When I read this, like, if you're some sort of red deck, right, and you're already super low on cards, you play this for three mana, try to draw, like, a one drop in a land, make your land drop, play the one drop. Sure, you got to discard, but you already had no cards in hand anyway. You get a 4/3. You got, like, three cards worth of card advantage, two cards worth of card advantage. Or if you have a handful of cards, the card's pretty bad, right, because you're going to end up tabulting yourself and discarding stuff that you really want because you got to discard at random. Is this card good? Like, this reads to me like a card that could be really good. Or because it's at random, maybe it's stone unplayable.
I mean, I play Desperate Ravings in standard.
Oh, man, I remember that card.
Okay, Boomer. Okay. So we got to bring up Think Twice variants here.
I'm getting called Boomer. Come on, man.
I too, was a Desperate Ravings believer,
yeah,
by
exactly.
The way.
Yeah, exactly. Don't lie. The card is fun as hell.
For you non-boomers, is it Think Twice where you draw an extra card, but then you got to discard at random?
With flashback.
Flashback, yeah. Is it card?
Is it card before is it was number one? This card seems really good, dude.
It seems good, right?
Right. It reads really
in
good.
Mono red or is it? Do we care about drawing the extra cards to trigger stuff? Or do we care about the raw number of cards?
In Tiger Seal, there's lots of looters. Seal. Like Duelist of the Mind. You have lots of things that just off the initial first three cards is huge. Like, you may not live long enough to watch me discard three at random, right? Like, that's what I'm thinking here.
Also, the discard's good with Monument, and they printed, another, like, a class Monument in the Turtle set that when you discard a card, I think it's, like, two damage to each opponent or something, and it has other abilities. So, like, maybe the discard could be an upside in the right Izzet deck, too.
Yeah.
Also, so this guy looks like he came out of Duskmourn. I don't know what happened, but in my 90s cartoon, he had a hockey stick. He's now wielding.
He looks like a horror movie. Yeah.
Yeah, like it looks like he's gonna murder you. It looks like we're gonna just play some pickup ball on the street before. But
Richard, what do you think he's based off of?
Yo, he was a good guy, bro. He had a nice hockey stick. We were gonna just play some ball. This card. I don't know, man. It could be either very good or like stone unplayable. So this one is rough. It doesn't have haste, okay? It doesn't do anything fancy. True. It's just a 3-mana 4/3.
It doesn't need it. You
but like you can't
haste.
Play it on curve. and you're trying to go long? Like, what? Like, I like, you just try to draw three burn spells with this thing and burn them out? Because it doesn't help you finish the game early. You don't want to cast this on curve, right? Because you're going to actually empty your hand. Unless you're playing an Izzet Shell where, like, you know, the drawing and discarding is giving you something valuable.
Is it
it's
looting?
Only a 4-3.
Like, but you got to think about this. You do not... Okay, how does this trigger work? Because your opponent is incentivized to not kill it, right?
That is true.
I my guess is this is like one of those delayed triggers. That's how I read it, is like even if it's on the battlefield. So I don't think you could like play this draw three and then boomerang basics back to your hand or sack it and not have to discard the three.
At the
I
beginning
think you're
of
discard
next
the three no matter
so
what.
So you'll have to discard even if Casey Jones is removed from the battlefield.
Okay, then.
Yeah. I'm so torn on that. I either think this is like four of staple card in some decks, or we will never hear about it again. I don't think there's any.
I think
ground.
You have
this
to have
a
burn
good
package.
It's either busted or
like how many lightning bolts or whatever do we actually have in our format such that you're not like you don't want Casey Jones into Casey Jones, right? You want Casey Jones into like 9 damage with the burn, and they go to the guy's face, and then like it's it, right?
It reminds me a little bit of Expressive Iteration with how you want to play this card. I think it's like you want to play it on 4, maybe, where you can like have a land drop available. You play this, you draw the 3, you make the land drop, you play a 1 drop, and you get your value out of it. Something like that, maybe.
I mean, I'm okay. Looting. I think the obvious shell is looting. Would you play it in there, flat out right now? Because Tursa doesn't get played right now. Right? Ooh. But Tursa only draws 2 and you ditch 2.
Yeah.
But drawing 3?
Draw 3, discard 3. I would at least try it. I'm so on the fence on this one. Yeah. I think it's worth trying and looting though.
Ravenous Robots. Oh, that's what these things are called. These little chomper things from the video game. 2 mana, 2/1. When you cast an artifact spell, create a 1/1 colorless robot artifact creature token. Red and tap it. Creature tokens you control gain haste until end of turn.
Wait, this is sick.
This is like,
I think this guy's very
young
good.
Pyromancer type
and Pinnacle effect. Emissary. And weapons manufacturing, all in standard, that care about just, like, I will make you tokens whenever you cast an artifact. There's got to be a deck there, right? Like, if you put all that stuff together,
I mean,
you get super blown out by fire magic.
Fire magic.
Look,
one
hey,
fire
you know,
magic.
That seems to be the nature of the day. Vivi's leaving his touch even while he's banned, okay? But the main thing is that this card, I think, is really good. It's a cheap artifact producer. It is an artifact, and I think they revealed something that looked remotely like, or sorry, revealed, spoiled, a cranial plating.
Yes, there is like a red cranial plating.
Wait,
type equipment.
Wait, there's a red cranial plating? Like actual cranial plating?
It doesn't have
the... It's 2 to cast, 1 to equip, I believe, but you can't attach it at instant speed, but it has some additional upside. I can't remember. Pay 5 and you copy something or something.
You copy the artifact itself, the cranial plating. So you just make a copy of it, right?
Okay.
So I think Artifacts is looking kind of juicy, right? Because we're now seeing, like, Tezzeret, all these other cards coming into play here. I'd keep an eye on it. If there's an artifact deck, it's here, right? This is a part of it, right?
Yeah, I just see the redundancy with Pinnacle Emissary, and that makes me think, like, there's probably a deck around this. When you see, like, an effect that's powerful enough to see play in Modern, like Pinnacle Emissary, and then you get the copies 5-8 of it in Standard, that definitely makes me think you can build a deck around this. It would be really good. We'll have to wait and see how good it is. Artifacts can be fragile, so maybe the fire magic thing's too big of an issue, but I think it's definitely going to be worth trying to build.
I mean, I know I'm not allowed to bring this setup, but you remember Spider-Man? Well, don't worry. Iron Spider is...
Iron Spider would be good in that deck. It would actually be... We might actually have a deck for Iron Spider.
Yeah, because like, you do the Marvin curve into Iron Spider, so then Marvin just serves as your earlier Iron Spider, and then now you just give all your artifacts and whatever 1-1 counters. So...
It triggers itself.
You like this one, Richard?
And it's not legendary, so...
Hey, we did it.
I like it. It reminds me of Steel Cutter. All right, you go, you hold up.
Hold on, what do you mean?
Ravenous Robots. Untap Ravenous Robots. Artifact. And then cross your fingers, there's no fire magic, right? But like the fact that it combos with itself, and if you get two of them going, like it starts getting disgusting. Now, of course, it's not, they don't have prowess, right? Because the steel cutter tokens had prowess and haste for good measure. But I think this could be interesting. Actually, you get haste. So I guess you could pay one red and give haste too, but they don't pump themselves.
And you're not cap like Cutter, where Cutter would only ever make one token a turn. This, you can make 2, 3, 4 tokens if you have enough artifacts.
So, yeah, this card's
maybe
sweet.
We need Casey Jones here, right? You gotta
Casey Jones.
You just play one drop artifacts, right? And then you just play Casey Jones, refill, play some more artifacts.
Hello, Kadultha Red. Welcome back, buddy.
Kadultha Red. That's some good boomer stuff right there. All right, here, the moment we've been waiting for. Cool but rude. One in a red. It's an enchantment class. Okay, so where did enchantments class come from?
D&D.
Thanks,
when you
D&D.
Attack, you may discard a card. If you do, draw a card. Okay, level 2. So for one and a red, level 2. Whenever you discard a card, this class deals 2 damage to each opponent. Casey Jones, 6 damage, yeah? One in a red, level 3. When this class becomes level 3, search library for a card, put in your hand, shuffle, then discard a card at random.
Gamble.
And most importantly, it's Raphael throwing a pizza at a foot soldier's face.
Got him.
Even if I cover up that art, this class is sick, right? I think this is a design is a very cool card. It's cheap enough to play, it's respectable enough, and it's in that sweet standard spot of 2 mana. Dude, this card is actually like really, really solid. And the best part is each level after only costs 2 mana to level up. It doesn't cost like, you know, kind of like 3, 4, 5 or anything more than that. It's just 2 each time.
So my question is, I think this card is also very good. The art is one of the cringier ones they've shown off so far.
How? It's so sick.
It's a pizza in New York City.
You don't like anyway. Pizza? Do you not like fun? What's going on here, guys?
I love pizza. I don't know about on my Magic cards, but regardless, does this make it in the lesson stack? Like, I see another Monument to Endurance type effect. It's in the right colors. I guess you wouldn't take advantage of the first level very much, but then the second level is like a Monument to Endurance that allows you to be uncapped, right? It's not once per turn. You can discard a bunch of cards and like close out the game very quickly, and then you could even tutor up a monument or whatever the last level if you wanted to. But do you think this could make it in lessons?
I think you can make it in looting. I think looting just got more stuff. Because I think
I mean,
this,
it seems good in looting too, yeah.
God, is it has so many archetypes. That's just how deep it is, right?
Like, we're going to end up in a standard with like 20 different decks, but like 15 or is it?
I think it's going to be really good in looting. I don't know if lessons, because lessons probably won't benefit as much from that initial whenever you attack. But it still does have Grand. Grand's thrown hands numerous times on turn 1. So like,
and Storm Chaser's talent tokens, right?
Yeah.
Like you
actually,
still
yeah.
So
why
it might
not?
Actually be fine. Yeah.
My question here is like, is this better than like anything that it's got? Because like you've got to cut something, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, these cards are good, but looting has the perfect shell and artist talent has the monument, right?
That would be the question. Like, the argument I could see, is there any argument to, like, playing this over Monument, and then your deck dodges Artifact Hate completely? Does that matter? Like,
I thought that was the upside. Right? I thought that was an upside, right? Because, like, now you're hitting people on multiple axes. So you're hitting them on the enchantment side with Artist Talent, but you're also hitting them with the Artifact side. So you need a versatile answer.
Yeah, I guess that's true. It does pressure in multiple ways. Yeah, I don't know what you cut. I don't know. I mean, I guess you cut like Ryle. I see like there's a couple of flex slots in some of the builds, but what
Ryle
do you think,
makes
Richard?
Otters.
It does make otters to trigger your
to
trigger your class in loot. Do you think this card's good, Richard?
I think it's pretty good. I think it's super well costed. And the question is, can you ever discard enough cards? And we know, yes, you can, because there's multiple decks in standard, like discarding cards, right? And they could discard a lot of cards. So I think this does pretty good. The gamble, I think, is super important, right? Because you don't even need to get there, right? Like, just getting to level 2 is where you want to be. And then for a lowly 2 mana more, you get to gamble. So I think that's the actual like super sauce that puts this over its, you know, contemporaries. So I actually like this card. I don't know how I feel about Cool But Rude and pizza throwing being part of standard, but this card has to be powerful enough. And again, we can go mono red, Casey Jones, Cool But Rude, right? Like yeah. There's some weird shenanigans you can be doing that maybe break outside the normal Is It shell. So I'm excited to see where this one goes. But Casey Jones deals 6 damage.
That's like, so gross.
And then you gamble up another Casey Jones to turn after, do it again, right? You could keep doing this, right?
Or like wheel effects. Like you would deal so much damage if you gamble up a wheel and just wheel. Big commander, it's even each opponent, so it's really, really gonna smash. Really gonna smash for a ton of damage. Okay, can I ask you guys about one last card before we gotta wrap things up today? Because we haven't talked about any of the actual turtles, and they're the kind of the headliner of the set. We've been around the turtles. What do you think of Michelangelo Improviser? It's a 4 mana 4/4 legendary mutant ninja turtle. And then you can sneak it for 4 mana also. It's a green card. And then it says when deals combat damage to a player, you may put a creature and or land card from your hand onto the battlefield. So this is another card. It's not meeting the 2 mana criteria or 3 mana criteria for standard. It's 4 mana, but you can sneak it into play and get its ability. And then the upside is you can put a really massive thing and also a land into play. You get both of them off of it. Is there any way this card's actually good enough? Like, do you think these new sneak cards, like, what do you expect? Is this going to be a playable card? I know when we had Kamigawa Neon Dynasty, ninjas didn't really make it as like a decking standard, like super, like a tribal style deck. Well, you saw some ninjas on their own. Do you think we'll see a deck like that this time? Can this be a playable card?
Well, I mean, that's because these ninjas are good on their own. I remember last time we had the pseudo splinter in Neon Dynasty, and it was a ninja lord effect, which makes zero sense because you never had that many creatures.
Yeah, that is true. You always mounted them, yeah.
So this just is a powerful effect, but I don't know. I mean, isn't Training Grounds in standard because of Aftermath? Or no, Aftermath is gone.
I think it rotated with Aftermath.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so if there's no Training Grounds.
So you're going to pay full price, I think. Although, I mean, it is in Badgermole Cub colors, so you can be doing this pretty quickly in standard.
But then, oh man. But then, like, what am I going to put in with Badgermole Cub, right? Like,
that's the question, right?
Another like, Badgermole Cub?
I mean, the new build's got, like, Riddlers and a hoof in the deck, so maybe there's a build that could take advantage
but
of
hoof
it.
But hoof is very bad post-combat, right?
No, this comes in tapped and attacking during the declare block phase. So you would still get the damage out of the hoof, right? Like if you put hoof into play tapped and attacking, you'd get all the pump out of it.
But it has to... Wait, hold on. So Michelangelo deals combat damage to a player.
I'm so dumb. Yeah. I was thinking of the sneak mechanic, not the... Yes,
sneak, obviously. That's how that works. But it could be good. Yeah. I mean, this is a future thing because now it makes it so like little random like poopers, like little 1/1 elves could be a very real thing.
You got to keep it in mind, at least, the fact that, like, if they hit you, something kind of like Kaido, when you play against Dimir and you're, like, trying to chump block these stupid creatures that don't matter because you know they can put the Kaido into play and you're like, I can't let that happen.
I think that is just a testament to how sweet the mechanic itself is more than whatever you put in. I think just on sneak alone, this has a chance to play.
Richard, 4 mana.
No.
Sneaky,
I mean,
though.
Kona's still here, right? Kona's in the format.
Kona's still
I
here.
I can do the thing without you interacting with me, really, right? You got to kill a much bigger creature, not just have a blocker up.
That's fair.
I can't imagine. Like, you have to sneak this in.
Right.
It's only a 4/4. You need to untap with it, and you're putting in... What's the best creature we can put in? We were just talking about the brain guy. Krang.
Yeah,
that's
the brain
not
guy.
It.
You can put him into play.
that's not the choice. I feel Kona is just easier with the station.
Progenitus. Progenitus. That's in standard.
Okay,
right,
you
now
need to untap
for some boomer fun.
You need to untap and still survive.
Easy.
Yeah, there's no win the game the turn it comes in card or creature in standard.
Get a land. Is that relevant? I don't think so.
I mean, it's nice upside, but I don't think that changes the equation on it really.
I'm surprised this is not like a 5/5 or a 5/6 or something. Like a 4 mana 4/4 is not a good body, like in itself.
Funny how our concept of power and toughness is skewed. Because earlier we were talking about a 3-drop 4-3. We're like, yeah, it's not that good. Like the body's not that good. And I remember like when I started playing a three mana 4-3 was like above the curve. You got a 3-mana like a Loxodon Smiter, a 3-mana 4-4. You're like, whoa, that thing's huge. Or it's changed so much.
It gets exponentially worse the more pips you add. Right at 4, you expect minimum 5/5. Right,
yeah,
with like
that's true
Palookernos crap, right? Like it has to fight, yeah. It has to have trample. This one gives you the free body, but like itself is not powerful enough. So if you don't have the payoff in hand, you feel like you're hitting with a wet noodle. So it's interesting.
Yeah. I'm surprised you chose that turtle to talk about. I know we're wrapping up, but like Leonardo Cutting Edge, I feel like synergizes more. That's with like the deck it wants to go in. It's one
in
a white.
Johnny Pride Mate.
Yeah, it's the Pride Mate with sneak for one white, and has lifelink itself. So it, with it growing, it having lifelink and it having sneak, that synergizes with everything that Soul Sisters wants to do. Seth, you bounce back a one drop. You play the one drop again, and then it triggers like something else,
but you
right?
You pull
like,
back your Soul Sister. Now you don't get the life gain.
But you don't need to worry about it because your Leonardo has lifelink. One of the biggest things I think in design in the movie, the recent years, is that Pride Mates now have lifelink. Aerith had it, right? Now this, I think that's big. I think that is big on its own.
I think this card is very good. So I think it's very good in the Life Gain decks. It is legendary, right? So you're not going to be able to stack them up like an Essence Channeler or a Pride Mate. But I think like we have a Life Gain deck that's tier 2 in Standard. I think you play this card. I don't know if you play 4 of them because you have like Essence Channeler, Amelia, and then now this, I guess, is the third kind of Pride Mate effect if you're an Orzhov. I think I would play at least a couple copies for sure. I think this is a very good card in the Life Gain deck.
I think, unfortunately, I might start saying goodbye to Pride Mate itself, right? Because, like,
I think Pride Mate's been power crept. Yeah.
Oh, no. Pride Mate.
Essence Channeler.
This starts as
better.
A 1-1. That's the difference, right? It has lifelink. It's legendary. It starts as a 1-1. Pride Mate starts as a 2-2.
The sneak, I think, is actually huge on this, though, because if you actually do have some Soul Warden effects stacked up and you sneak this into play, it will trigger all of them, and you might be hitting for, like, 3, 4, 5, like, by surprise, the turn you put it into play, potentially.
You're right.
So I think the sneak is actually kind of good on this card. It actually is kind of sneaky damage, yeah.
It gives you another trigger, too, because you play that body again for another trigger.
Oh, right. Oh, I wonder, you remember like the ninjutsu loops where you could keep ninjutsuing the same thing?
I wonder
if there's some sort of like ninjutsu where you can like use that to trigger your Soul Sisters and loop two of these to like make it huge, something like that.
Like the web slinging loop, right? Like
Now I'm interested if maybe there's a way.
The Soul Sisters podcast.
I think that's Soul Sisters podcast.
We've always been.
That's all the cards we got time to talk about today. But let us know what you think. How did your pre-release go? Did you open a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle card? Let us know in the comments, and we'll be back next week to talk anything that goes on in the world of Magic. So until then, have a spectacular week, everyone. And this is the crew signing out.